Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a really interesting scenario, one that quite a few landowners are thinking about.
Yeah, taking that farm or those woods you own.
Exactly, that big piece of property, and turning it into a premium income source by leasing it out, specifically to hunters.
It's a smart way to use an asset, for sure.
Hmm.
But it immediately opens up a whole can of worms, doesn't it? Questions about, you know, what hunters expect, what gear is involved.
And the big one, risk. How do you handle the liability side of things?
Right. That's the core issue, really. If you're the landowner, what do you let the hunters use? Are your tree stands fair game? What about that old shed? And crucially, how do you protect yourself legally and financially, especially, you know, in today's legal climate?
Absolutely. So our mission for this deep dive is basically to give you, the listener, a shortcut through all that.
We wanted to show how getting the planning right things, like a solid lease agreement and the right kind of insurance, can make this work smoothly.
Yeah, turning what could be a real headache into something that actually works well for both the landowner and the hunters. Good partnership.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's start with section one, the human side of it. We're talking premium clients here, hunters paying potentially thousands for exclusive access.
Yeah.
So what do they generally expect when it comes to using gear already on the property?
Well, it might be a bit surprising, but the sources suggest that seasoned hunters, the ones paying for these leases, they generally don't expect to just walk in and use existing stands or blinds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They usually plan on scouting the place themselves and bringing their own gear, equipment they trust, you know?
That makes sense, especially with safety stuff like tree stands. Yeah. You want your own.
Exactly. But, and this is a big but, because they are paying a premium, they expect flexibility, they expect to be able to put up their stands, maybe use an ATV to get deeper into the property.
Ah, so that's where the landowner's concerns bump up against the hunter's needs. Control versus access.
Precisely. And the sources point out, if you look at leases that turn over constantly versus ones where hunters stay year after year,
yeah,
the difference is often that fluid partnership, as they call it. Now, look, it's absolutely the landowner's call what's allowed and what isn't. No question.
Of course, it's their land.
But if the landowner is, let's say, overly rigid, you know, super strict entry times, no ATVs at all, can't scout in the off season, they're likely going to see hunters leaving after a year.
Which kills the predictable income stream you were trying to build.
Right. That instability isn't good for business.
So, okay, what are the specific friction points? The things you absolutely need to nail down in the agreement right away to avoid those issues and keep things smooth.
The sources flagged three main areas that often cause trouble. First one, access and scouting.
Right. Hunters need to get out there before the season starts.
For sure. They need to hang trail cameras, maybe trim a few branches for a clear shooting lane, check for deer sign. The lease has got to be clear about when they can do that in the off season.
Yeah. So maybe specific times, like daylight hours only, avoid holidays.
Something like that, yeah. But the access needs to be there in some form. Second point, vehicle use.
Ah, yes, the ATVs we mentioned. Getting gear and maybe game back at?
Exactly. ATVs, UTVs, that kind of thing. These can be a real sticking point, especially if you've got crops or sensitive habitat. The contract needs to say, okay, stick only to these designated trails.
And penalties if they don't, like if they tear up a field.
Absolutely. Penalties for damage to crops, fences, roads, whatever. It needs teeth. And the third big area is game processing and waste.
Oh, yeah. Field dressing and what happens after. Always a potential issue.
You've got to be clear about where they can clean game, if anywhere on the property. Improper disposal, that brings scavengers, smells.
Could even violate local rules.
Exactly. Yeah. So addressing these things specifically, not just a vague be respectful clause, that's what makes it professional and avoids conflict later.
Okay, that makes sense. So moving from the people involved to the actual tools they use. We said hunters often bring their own gear, but that gear, especially stands and blinds, carries its own risks the landowner needs to think about.
Right, let's look at those structures, but maybe through the lens of liability this time.
Good angle. Start with the classic tree stand.
Okay, the tree stand. Tactically, for the hunter, it's huge. Gives you that high vantage point, better field of view, and maybe most importantly, it helps lift your human scent above where deer normally detect it.
Plus, you're hidden up there. So tactically essential for the hunter to feel they're getting value.
Definitely. But for the landowner, what does that tree stand represent in the contract?
Risk.
Liability exposure. Simple as that. Now, if the hunter uses their own portable stand, the risk is, well, somewhat lower. But the lease must still require safety standards. Things like...
Like wearing a safety harness. Always.
Absolutely. Mandate harness use. And demand full indemnification, meaning if the hunter falls because their own stand failed or they made a mistake, they agree not to sue the landowner.
Okay, but what if the landowner provides the stand or allows a permanent one to be built?
Ah, now the liability picture changes drastically. That permanent stand, it needs regular inspection. Maybe even an engineer's okay, depending on how it's built. The landowner could absolutely be held partly responsible if that structure fails.
Wow. Okay, so that really highlights the difference compared to something like a ground blind.
Exactly. A ground blind, you know, one of those pop-up tent-like things. It's usually portable, easy to set up, blends in well, great concealment, protects you from the wind and rain a bit.
And much lower structural risk for the landowner, right? Since it's temporary and on the ground?
Minimal risk, really. And they're great for accessibility, too. Like if you're hunting with a kid or someone who can't easily climb a tree stand.
Okay, but then there's the luxury option. The tower blind. The big enclosed box on stilts.
Right, the tower blind. Kind of the best of both worlds. For the hunter, you get the elevation of a stand plus the comfort and concealment of a blind.
Sounds great for the hunter. Liability-wise for the landowner.
That's the high watermark for liability. It's a permanent, often large structure. If you, the landowner, allow or provide one of these, the sources are clear. You need the strongest possible waiver and indemnification language in that lease.
Like going beyond just the standard clause.
Yes, including requiring the hunter, the lessee, to get their own insurance writer specifically naming you, the landowner, as an additionally insured party for that structure.
Got it. So the takeaway here is the more permanent and complex the structure hunters use, the tougher and more specific your contract language needs to be on safety, responsibility, and who pays if something goes wrong.
Okay, so once you've kind of hammered out the rules for using gear and thought about the risks, now we get to the absolute bedrock of protecting yourself. It's really a two-part solution the sources emphasize for managing this whole relationship.
Right. Part one is that well-written lease agreement we keep mentioning. We've talked about ATV trails and stand rules, but what specific liability stuff does this contract absolutely have to cover beyond just the day-to-day rules?
This is where you get really specific. The contract needs to clearly assign responsibility for things like, what if the lessee accidentally starts a fire?
Oh, good point. Like a campfire getting out of control.
Or damages existing property, like running into a fence or driving through a planted field. And a really big one.
Yeah.
What about the lessee's guests?
If the hunter brings a buddy and the buddy gets hurt.
Exactly. The contract needs to state clearly that the lessee is responsible for their guests and indemnifies the landowner if a guest tries to sue. The lease is your first really critical layer of defense.
Makes sense. And the second layer, the sources call this maybe the most important step.
That's getting a great liability insurance policy. Look, the stats actually show hunting is safer than many people think. Safer than riding a bike, for instance.
Huh. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, but accidents can happen. And when they do around hunting, a fall from a stand, a vehicle mishap on the property, they can be severe and very expensive. You just don't want to run a premium lease operation without solid insurance backing everyone up. It protects you. It protects the hunter. It gives everyone peace of mind.
Okay, so insurance is key. But not just any insurance, right? Your standard homeowner's policy probably won't cut it if you're leasing land commercially like this.
That's usually correct. Homeowner's policies often have exclusions for business activities or specific recreational risks, so the sources point towards targeted insurance. Policies built specifically for things like vacant land and hunting leases.
And that's where vacant land insurance, or VLI, comes in.
Exactly, VLI. Its main job is to provide general liability coverage. Basically, it protects you, the landowner, if someone makes a claim saying they got hurt or their property was damaged because of your negligence related to the land itself.
Okay, this is where it gets a little technical, but it seems really important. The sources say VLI protects you against claims from three different types of people who might be on your land: invitees, licensees, and trespassers. Why break it down like that? Why does that matter?
It matters a lot because the law sees your duty or responsibility differently depending on why that person is on your property. Let's take invitees first.
Okay, who's an invitee?
An invitee is someone there for your benefit, the landowner's benefit. Think maybe a timber consultant you hired to walk the property or someone you paid to help clear brush.
Gotcha. So if they get hurt while doing work for me.
VLI is designed to cover that liability claim against you because they were there at your invitation for your commercial purpose.
Okay. Next group, Licensees. This sounds like our hunters.
That's exactly who they are. A licensee is someone you've given permission to be on the property, but they're there for their own enjoyment or purpose, like the hunter who's paying you for access.
So if a paying hunter twists their ankle on a hidden tree root while walking to their stand,
VLI is structured to cover the liability claim that might arise from that. The claim would likely be that you, the landowner, didn't maintain a reasonably safe property for the recreational users you allowed. It directly addresses that core leasing relationship.
Makes sense. Okay, now the one that always seems weird, trespassers. People who are not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Why on earth does the insurance need to cover claims from them?
Yeah, this one surprises people, but it really speaks to that modern legal climate we talked about earlier. Even if someone is on your land completely without permission.
Like someone just cutting across your property.
Right, taking a shortcut, and they step in a hole you didn't know was there and break their leg. They could still potentially sue you.
Wow.
So, VLI covering even trespasser claims shows how vital that protection is. It's acting as a shield for your assets against almost any liability claim related to the land itself, authorized visitor or not. It really drives home how broad liability protection needs to be these days.
That's comprehensive. And beyond just the coverage itself, the sources mentioned these VLI policies are often pretty straightforward to get set up.
Yeah, they highlighted some real practical benefits, things like getting coverage started the very next day, often with a zero deductible, which is nice, no out-of-pocket cost before the insurance kicks in.
That takes some worry off the table right away.
For sure. And two other cool administrative things they mentioned. First, these policies often come bundled with a custom lawyer-approved liability waiver template.
Oh, handy. So you can use that right in your lease agreement.
Exactly. Strengthens your contract immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And second, the whole process is usually instant. You buy the policy and boom, the certificate of insurance lands in your email right away.
And gets uploaded to your account online.
Right. So you have immediate proof of coverage you can show your lessees, which adds to that professional feel and reassures them too.
Okay. This has been incredibly helpful. Really clarifies the steps. So it seems like successfully leasing your land for hunting really boils down to finding that clear professional balance.
Yeah, it's about meeting those hunter expectations for good access and the ability to use their gear effectively while locking down your own protection as the landowner. And the keys to that protection are a really specific, well-drafted lease agreement.
And the right kind of robust, targeted insurance, like that vacant land insurance we discussed, getting that professional framework in place from the very start seems crucial.
Absolutely. Sets the right tone.
It really does.
Yeah.
But all right, here's that final thought for you, the listener, to kind of chew on after we wrap up.
Okay.
We spent a good bit of time talking about how VLI protects landowners, even from claims brought by trespassers, people who had no right to be there. Now think about that. If the insurance industry sees the need to provide coverage that broad, protecting against liability even from unauthorized individuals, what does that really tell us about the fundamental need for comprehensive asset protection for any landowner today?
Regardless of whether you're actively leasing the land or just letting it sit vacant, it sort of underscores that in today's world, potential liability doesn't always need an invitation, does it? Something to think about.